Earlier this week, the family of George Floyd held a funeral for him at the Fountain of Praise Church in Houston, the city where he was raised. Only a couple of years ago, he had moved from there to Minneapolis, where last month he was killed by a police officer who held his knee on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. All of you know the ghastly details of his death. You have probably watched the video recording of him on the pavement or read the sickening accounts of his last words, horrified, as I was, by yet another black man dying at the hands of police. Speakers at his funeral issued a rallying cry for overdue justice, for an immediate stop to police brutality, white supremacy, hate crimes, and racial profiling. But they also voiced their hope that all the good that filled his abbreviated life, their fondest memories of him as a family member, friend, and neighbor, not be erased by the evil incident that ended it. Perhaps you have seen that touching photograph of Floyd standing with the men in his church group, holding aloft a red Bible with his name engraved on its cover. Floyd mentored youth in his community and was respected there as a person of faith. In that group photo, he holds his Bible in one hand while his other hand rests on a friend's shoulder. All the men are standing close together. One of them has his hand on Floyd's shoulder. You can sense the strength of their connection to one another and to the life they share. The Bible is a complicated book with mixed messages that have harmed as well as healed, I know, but I cannot help but think about how it begins with the essential goodness of creation. In that first chapter of Genesis describing creation, the Creator God looks upon all that is created and sees that it is good, and so calls it good. Humankind is part of that creation, created in the image of God, Genesis explains, and it also is good. In the midst of all that goodness, however, is forbidden fruit, the knowledge of good and evil. When humans taste it, they suddenly know something apart from original goodness. While there are varying theological definitions of evil in theistic traditions, they almost always define evil in relation to the good. Our Unitarian forebearer, Ralph Waldo Emerson, argued that good was primary while evil was secondary. It only signified the lack of good. Emerson famously called evil so much non-entity. While I once agreed with him, I do not any longer. I believe that evil is very much an entity and that it is sadly all too active in our world. The definition that I have come to rely upon myself is a more classical theological formulation, that evil is that which seeks to separate us from goodness itself, from the good intent that gives rise to life. Evil has a drive to limit, repress, and even annihilate the good, and it is ruthless in pursuing those purposes. The outcry against the killing of George Floyd is an outcry against an obviously evil act, but also against an act that is all too emblematic of the evil of American racism itself. Racism in America seeks to separate, and as such, is unrelenting evil. It first separates black and brown bodies from their inborn humanity. It then systematically separates white people like me from people of color and the harshest realities they endure. Such a separation only reinforces already terrible inequality. As the Supreme Court ruled decades ago, there is no such thing as separate but equal. All our segregated spaces and glaring disparities testify to the crushing legacy of racial subjugation in the United States. Earlier this month, when I saw those controversial pictures of President Trump standing in front of that empty Episcopalian church in Washington, thrusting a Bible toward the camera, I was repulsed by it. He had used troops and tear gas to clear the crowd of peaceful protesters from out in front of the White House so that he could stand apart from and above all the human anguish surrounding him, cynically wielding a religious totem. I mentally compared it to the snapshot I had seen of Floyd with those friends from his Bible study, that tangle of helping hands and human connection. I remembered again that evil always seeks to separate us from the good. Once we appreciate the dynamics of good and evil more fully, we become better able to notice the force of them in our world and to name them whenever and wherever we find them. Knowing good and evil allows us to make a series of decisions in response to both. We can refuse, resist, reject evil. We can embrace, affirm, and nurture good. There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King contended. When we discover this, we are no longer strangers to ourselves, and we are no longer strangers to one another. We care less about who is right or wrong, on this side or that. These are such polarized and fractious times. They are hard to endure, and they are not made any easier by our judgments of one another. We all need to attend to whether we ourselves are aligned with good impulses or evil ones. Across this country and around the world, there have been huge uprisings in response to the killing of George Floyd. Everywhere, people are proclaiming their belief that Black Lives Matter. They do, indeed. They always have, and they always will. It's the fact of that which has been discounted, forgotten, or denied. As Floyd was being asphyxiated on the pavement as the life was leaving his body, he called out for his mother, for the person that delivered him to life. At the Minneapolis Memorial for Floyd, the Reverend Al Sharpton spoke for the entire African American community when he demanded, "Get your knee off our necks." In commanding that, he was renouncing evil. While a few of the protests in the U.S. have erupted in violent clashes, the vast majority of them are free from violence and even enmity. Facing down police and troops, protesters have said, "Kneel with us." And several of those uniformed people have, sometimes individually, sometimes collectively, sometimes readily, sometimes falteringly. Each one of those kneeling took a knee for Black lives senselessly lost. A knee can be used for good or evil. A Bible can be used for good or evil. We see how these things are true. Rhetoric can be used for good or for evil, and power, too. All of us in America today simply need to stop pretending that we do not know which is which. Evil separates us from our shared humanity, and goodness connects us to it. "You have to understand," Reverend Sharpton told the predominantly African-American mourners at the Fountain of Praise Church. "If you bother any one of us, it's a value to all of us." He told the mourners that Floyd's killing had started a movement that's going to change the world. "I believe that myself. A frank reckoning with American racism has begun. Reforms of law enforcement have begun in earnest, and closed cases have been reopened. Statues of slaveholders and colonizers have come toppling down, and Confederate flags are finally being banned. Some corporations have made the upcoming Juneteenth holiday commemorating the end of legal slavery in America a paid holiday for all their employees. Appropriately enough, that June 19th holiday celebrates a freedom that came far too late, but came at last. We cannot undo the tragic human toll of anti-Blackness in this country, but as people of faith, conscience, and goodwill, we can dedicate ourselves to stopping it from mounting any further. Perhaps the best-known Bible passage addressing good and evil is the psalm spoken most often at funerals and gravesides, Psalm 23. In it, the psalmist declares, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Surely." The psalmist recognizes the reality of evil openly and honestly, but still refuses to cower before it and refuses to be separated from the good because of it. These days, we all need to muster the sort of moral courage the psalmist articulates in order to claim goodness as our universal birthright. We cannot allow the evil we must face completely to negate the good that is still possible. After the Floyd funeral concluded, his body was taken to a Houston cemetery to be laid in rest alongside the remains of his mother, whose name he had cried shortly before he stopped breathing. May none of us ever forget the goodness of that life she bore. In the days to come, let us demand something different, just, better, and far more wholesome and much holier for the lives of George Floyd's children and their children, too. We all know them now.